If you're not familiar with Gabe, Gabe is one of the world's leading language learning experts. He's fluent in 8 languages. He's also the founder of the language learning app Fluent Forever, which had the most successful crowdfunding campaign for an app ever. And I've been friends with Gabe for a while. He's an amazing human. And I've also used his methodology and his app before I've traveled and have found it incredibly effective. And I think he's one of the most thoughtful and dedicated people to the craft. So I'm excited to really dive into the weeds with him because I think it's going to be very valuable for everyone here. And for context, like how I like to do this is I like to get really tangible. So you have clear takeaways and can use this period of self-isolation to finally, you know, learn that new language that you've been, that has been on your goal list for a long time and figure out how to do it most effectively. So we'll go over his methodology in detail and then, you know, really start to break down step by step exactly what you should be doing each day to achieve these goals. So without further ado, Gabe, welcome. And
real quick before we dive in. So we're going to have time for Q&A at the end. And if you see at the bottom of Zoom, there's a Q&A section. So any questions that come in mind, just go ahead and drop them right in the Q&A. And you also see an upvote function. So if somebody else put in a question and you were like, oh, that was my question, just go ahead and give it an upvote. And when we get to the end, we're going to leave ample time to hear your questions as well. So Conrad, yeah, fire away.
Perfect. Yeah, Gabe, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. This is awesome.
Yeah, so I think polyglots like yourself are often, you know, just seen as freaks of nature. Mm. And this is either something that just came incredibly natural to you, you were born with this gift, or you grew up in a house where you just spoke multiple languages at home.
Yep.
But you have an interesting story and neither was the case for you. So for those in the audience who are not familiar with you, can you just start with, you know, a little background on you and then also why you got into language learning in the first place?
Sure. So initial background with language learning was, I think, pretty similar to a lot of people, which is to say, like, really bad. I spent 7 years doing, I had Hebrew school like 2-3 times a week, got nowhere. I had like, I think 10 words by the end of it. That was from like ages like 5 to 13 or something. Then in middle school, in junior high and high school, I got this opportunity to learn Russian, from like really good teachers, was like really psyched about that. Spent 5.5 years doing that, left that with like 40 words. And like, you know, 1.5 cases out of the 6, and just felt like, well, okay, I guess I don't got this thing. I was a science guy. Like I was always into engineering. That was my thing. Majored in mechanical engineering, but also in opera. I had a hobby of singing and I thought it would be kind of wacky to like double major in that. And so I did. And the opera side took over. And early on in that process, like 1.5 years in, I knew that I had to learn all these languages, at least like I had to take the classes. That was the requirement. And I was like, I'm not psyched about this. This is going to be really upsetting because I'm not good at this. And a friend of mine gave me this option of going, suggested that I go to Middlebury, Vermont for my language school, like during the summers, because you can get 2 semesters of credit there for 1 summer. And I thought, cool, I'm just going to get out of this thing. And they do these immersion programs where you sign a contract, says if you speak one word that's not German, you get kicked out. And I was dreaming in German in 2 weeks. And I, by the end of that thing, I was like solid B1 level with the European standards. Could hold really solid conversations. That was like the thing that convinced me I wanted to be an opera singer, was just this idea of like, I just completely rewired my brain to think in a new way. Like, and now I can sing in it. Like, this is amazing. There's no other career in the world except for like secret agent that allows me to just justify learning languages as my main job. Like, screw it. Like, let's do this opera thing. So that was the start of the language learning thing, was me realizing A, that this was a really necessary part of the career that I was in, and B, realizing that immersion was like amazing. And so I did another immersion for German, did another immersion for Italian, and then the method kind of came up when I with French. So that's kind of how I came into this thing in the first place.
Yeah. So walk us through what happened with French, like when you were when you realized you wanted to keep going and you wanted to go back to the school and study French.
The French deal was that I had done an immersion in Italian, but I did it in Italy. I was in Perugia. They have this university for foreigners. It's amazing. It was like $400 for a month of like 30 hours a week of class. Like it's heaven. and you're just sitting there eating the most amazing food in the world with the most amazing weather and the most amazing people. Like, it was just, it was one of the best summers of my life. But from a learning standpoint, it was like mediocre compared to Middlebury. Like, Italians like to speak English and they like to interact, and like, you have, you know, coffee breaks every 45 minutes so that you can like hang out. And so it was very Italian and very awesome, but also like a lot less intense than Middlebury. And I really wanted good French. Like, and so I wanted to re-enroll in Middlebury, and they had a level 1.5 for people who were not starting out, but also not very good. Like, level 1's beginner, level 1.5 is like the slightly accelerated thing. And I wanted to enroll in it, but they had a placement test and I didn't know French. And so I just cheated on it. And I figured if I cheated not knowing French and like wrote an essay in Google Translate, like, I'm not going to get very many points. And I might be able to just like scrape my way into level 1.5. And it turns out that no, you can actually get a fair number of points with Google Translate. So I placed into level 2 for intermediates. I had 3 months before the program started. The program starts with an interview for 15 minutes in French, which if you don't know French is really bad news. And if you really care about that program, like, double bad news. And I really didn't know French and I really cared about the program. So I went online and started just trying to figure out what the hell I can do to fix this problem, because I really didn't want to be caught. And I found these flashcard programs that just jam data in your head. And I created the method from that. It was just like, well, I know that immersion works. I know that not immersion doesn't work. What if I used these tools that everyone's using online to learn lots of data quickly? But what if I use that as if I was in Middlebury? What if I use that fully immersively without any English content? And that's what started the first version of the method.
Yeah. So I would love to dive into that and just give a quick overview of your methodology, because obviously immersion is the best way, but not everyone has the luxury of doing immersion. And, you know, I've been fascinated by languages for a long time, and I always kind of cram before I go on a trip because I have the motivation where I want to go there and I want to connect with people. Sure. My problem is I don't usually continue it once I get back. So, like, yep. You know, there's like a lot of like things I have to dust off the shelf. But through that, I've had like a little bit of a side hobby of testing every single language learning methodology. And so, sure. You know, I've taken the approach of like walking around with Pimsleur Audio. I've bought Rosetta Stone. I've used the Duolingo app. I took the, you know, the Benny Lewis approach and just hopped on iTalki, not knowing what I was doing. And like, I found yours to be very, very unique and very beneficial to kind of replicate that immersion on a limited basis. So can you just give a quick breakdown of just what exactly your methodology entails?
So basically I tackle the language learning problem from a memory standpoint. The theory going behind this thing, it's not really a theory, it's just this is the data that we have about language learning, is that we're good at this thing. The idea that we're bad at it is just it's just a myth. Like kids are not actually good at language learning. Kids are good at having 15,000 hours to spend on French, you know, by the age of 4. Like, that's the thing kids are good at, is being alive. Adults are really good at learning things, but we're like super strapped on time. And then it becomes a question of, well, if we're super strapped on time, can we spend our time really efficiently? And like, that's a memory problem. Like, we have the facility to do it, but also if you spend a week like on it with a tutor, and then you don't review it ever again, or you don't have any repetition on that, like, how are you supposed to actually remember what you talked about with your tutor? Like, how are you supposed to remember even what we talked about 5 minutes ago? So can you solve the memory problem? And if so, then like, you can solve the language problem. So on that memory front, I build it out of a few pieces. I start with ear training, I move to some basic vocab, and then I move to like full-on sentences. And I'm doing that, usually the way I jump into that example is kind of by talking about like the three mistakes that people tend to hit with language learning, and then about how to fix those mistakes. Those three mistakes tend to be not starting with ear training, not focusing on the right data set when you're learning the thing, which I could talk about in a second, and then like not repeating that data set so you can actually remember it long term. So like the ear training component, I usually jump to this example in Hungarian because it's a silly word. The Hungarian word for camera as an example is like fényképe zugép. So like that word, you hold on to it for like 0 seconds because it sounds like gibberish. And it's not a problem that Hungarian has new words, it's a problem that Hungarian has new sounds. So if like we're learning Martian and I say, oh, the word for camera is mognogbog, like that's actually fine. So this sound issue is a huge problem, and it's a special problem to languages. Like, there's all sorts of memory problems when it comes to like learning math or whatever, but like languages are unique in that they are always composed of sounds that you're not familiar with, unless you're talking about like Esperanto. So you have to fix that. There's research showing how to do that. So you basically have to practice telling the difference between pairs of similar sounding words. So if we're learning Spanish, you're learning the difference between like the T and the D, doma, toma, mas, mos, peso, piso, things like that. Like, you practicing that kind of thing is going to rewire your ears so that things don't stop sounding foreign. And then you've taken care of that component. Like, you're done. Like, that part's accomplished. Second chunk, like learning the right information. So there's telling you that finike bezukeep was the word for camera is like useless for everyone in this room. The word camera for the people here is connected with like all of the cameras. Like, every camera you've seen in your life is connected to the word camera in your head. Words like photo, photographer, shutter, lens, like that's all connected to camera. The iPhone 11 connected to camera. Like, whether you think that's phone or not, connected to camera. Like, camera is such a robust, like, cool thing for you that has all these pieces to it. Because that's what a word is. Like, that's what words actually are, is just a collection of connections between different things. Finike bezukeep is none of those things for most of the people in this room, unless someone knows Hungarian here. There you go. and so, like, that's not me telling you that that's the word for camera. Is like, I've given you not just like the surface level of camera, I've given you a completely different level. Like the translation is unrelated to me being able to use that word in a sentence. It's like this extra fact. And so it's almost useless. Like, it's just this close to useless. And that ends up being the problem with a lot of language learning, is that it's really easy to conceptualize, like, well, if I just memorize a bunch of translations, I'll know a bunch of words and then I'll know the language. But it turns out to just be false. It's the reason why immersion works, is that you are always learning the right data set, which is to say everything that is not the translation. That's the useful stuff. So the other reason why immersion works comes to that last piece, which is like, when do you repeat this stuff? Immersion is learning by fire hose. Like, you have no opportunity to forget. There's never a moment to forget. You're getting hit by this thing 16 hours a day, and anytime you forget a word, you get hit by it 10 times more in the next hour. And it's just like, well, I guess I'm gonna have to remember all this, because I can't even come up for air here. And so if you're not going to do that, if you're not going to be hit by this for 16 hours a day and you want to do this for 10 minutes a day, then you can be really like clever about that, or you can be kind of random about that. And like, being clever about that is like 5 to 10 times more effective than just kind of either not doing it or doing it randomly. And that clever piece is, we have tools nowadays that will monitor how well you know stuff. So if you learned that finike bezukeep should be connected to like these Hungarian cameras that look slightly different than the cameras you would expect them to be, because they buy different brands out there, and you make that connection, then like a computer can monitor how well you remember that. And then like, if you're about to forget it, the computer could be like, hey, do you remember what finike bezukeep was? And you'd be like, oh, right, it's that camera thing. Those are those crazy brands. And like, that's the most efficient moment to remember that thing. And so if you make sure that every piece of your language is always sort of getting quizzed right at those right times, then you can start being ridiculously effective in terms of like using your time really well. So that's kind of the mix of things that you can put together to make this system that like, it's not immersion because you don't have your 16 hours a day, but like you can actually use 10 minutes a day really, really effectively.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So there's two things I want to double tap into when it comes to that. So one is, you know, what you touched on was you're actually one of the only people I've ever heard of talking who has talked about vocab words in the sense of like emotional connection and talking about senses and smells and tastes and sounds. Like, most people kind of take like what we're used to in like middle school, or we just had to memorize 10 words. So I've always found that really fascinating. But you touched on this with camera, right? Like, we have an emotional connection to camera. We don't have an emotional connection to the Hungarian word of camera that I have already forgot what you just said. So one, why is that so powerful? But two, like, how do we actually do something with that? Because camera, you know, came from just like a whole lifetime of personal experiences. How do we do that when we're learning a foreign language?
Sure. There's this phenomenon when it comes to memory wherein we have a filter that's called levels of processing. That's like super cool when you start getting a feel for how this thing works. So like when you walk into the grocery store when you're like allowed out of curfew quarantine and you see like the 1,000 brands of deodorant or whatever, the 100 brands of deodorant, like you look at all those things and yet you don't walk out of the market and you're not able to recite all of those things. And that's a feature, not a bug. There are people who don't have that feature. They have like brain damage wherein they will like memorize all of those things. And that sounds really good. You're just like, wow, I can memorize everything. And that's like the worst life possible. You don't want to think about 100 brands of deodorant every time you walk through an aisle on the grocery store. You want to find the one that you want. And so this thing called levels of processing is how our brain works in terms of filtering out all that crap. So that you're just like, oh, I got the thing I wanted. Great. I'm leaving the market with no more junk in my head. And the way levels of processing works is that there's kind of four layers where you have something that is super not memorable, something that is like kind of memorable, something that is like memorable, and then something that is extremely memorable. And the mostly not memorable is the spelling or like visually recognizing what a word looks like. So when you're like doing the pattern recognition where you're walking through the grocery store just trying to find like, I want, you know, degree, whatever. That's pattern recognition and is the most forgettable part. It's, you know, you remembering that there's like four letters in the word pair, or like there in the word pair. Second layer down is the sound of something. So that's you listening to a radio station and you somehow memorizing every single word that was said during that hour-long podcast or whatever. That also would be a terrible curse. But like that is twice as memorable as that spelling layer. But it's not memorable. Like sounds are not super memorable, and sounds are exactly where translations live. So me telling you that, you know, mog nog bog is the word for camera in Martian. Like, let's say those sounds are even something that you can hold on to pretty well. Like the thing you're doing in your head is you're not thinking like, oh my God, mog nog bog. Oh, I took another picture with my mog nog bog. Like that's not going on in your head. What you're going on in your head is camera mog nog bog, camera mog nog bog. You're just trying to like get the sound of the word mog nog bog to connect to the sound of the word camera. You're not thinking about cameras at all. And so it's just sounds. I'm just telling you, pair this sound with that sound. And that's as memorable as someone trying to memorize all of the content of like word for word of this webinar. Which is to say, not memorable. Like, just this is super, super not memorable. But twice as memorable as the spellings. So, like, we're getting a little bit better. The next layer down where things actually become memorable is when you talk about concepts. So, like, what did we talk about in this webinar? That's actually memorable. What if I showed you a picture of, like, this is a Martian camera, and it looks kind of like our cameras, but a little different, and I'm like, mog nog bog, that's what that is. That's actually memorable. Like, that's the experience we have in the world is someone says, like, hey, like, this is a Leatherman. And people are like, oh, what? That's like a Swiss Army knife kind of thing. And you're like, yep, Leatherman. Like, that's what this is. Yeah. And then you just remember it. Like, that's the thing that we remember. Like, we're good. Like, that's below the layer of the filter. Like, all this other stuff is, like, filtered out. Your brain is actively trying to prevent you from memorizing this stuff because otherwise your life would be living hell. But as soon as you get to meaning, like, okay, fine. We should know that thing's a Leatherman, because like maybe tomorrow someone's going to say like, hey, can you get the Leatherman for my office? And you'd be like, what is that? Oh, okay. And then the one layer that's like deepest of all, and that actually came up like during the book, like I didn't know about this layer until I did the research and I was like, wait, what if I, because all the stuff I was doing for French and then for Russian after that was about that third layer, was can I connect pictures to words? Just that. Like, can I, because pictures are super concept-y. There's no way to look at a picture of a cat and think, oh, that's C-A-T. Like, no, you think about the animal that makes the meow sound. So that was what I was doing at that point. Then I saw this layer, which is personal. Is can you get a personal emotional connection to this word? Can you get, like, does Leatherman something that you actually care about in your life? Like, is that a thing that you would want? Do you have desire towards it? Is that a thing that your parents used? Did you get this from a friend? Like, all of those pieces, that stuff makes it twice as memorable as that layer that's below the filter, that meaning layer. So I found out about that thing, and I was like, well, let's try and use it. And for Hungarian, my third language with this method, I was like, let's put a personal connection with every single word I learn if I can. If I'm going to learn the word dog, let's stick my dog's picture on that flashcard, or let's take like my dog's name and stick it on the bottom of that flashcard. Like, let's come up with one moment where I'm actually thinking about how does this word apply to my life. Mm-hmm. And what I found was like, that made everything way easier to remember. It was like 50 to 100% better. So that's how our brain works. Like, we care about things that matter to us, like, and therefore we remember them.
Yeah.
And so when you start taking advantage of that, you get things that are super, super sticky.
Yeah. And so there's obviously time constraints, right? Like, it's impossible, at least like if you're, let's say you're trying to learn a language in 3, 6 months, 12 months, to make an emotional connection to everything. So I love your approach of the most awesome word list, where you pick the, 625 most essential words for everyone to learn. And, I remember when I discovered that, I was like very excited, but also very frustrated, because I had always like thought in my head, like, what are the words that are most common? I wrote them in a spreadsheet and then try to translate them all manually before I went to place. And it saved me many times. Like, there are times where like I'm stuck in a situation and I'm like, we're throwing out words, no one knows. And then finally they say something. I'm like, oh yes, that was on my spreadsheet. So then when I found your 625 most awesome word list, I was like, oh, great, this is fantastic. This does it all for me. But like, why 625 words? Like, how did you come up with this? Like, how essential is it that like, and how far would it get you if you just memorized, or, you know, not memorized, but like internalize those 625 words when you then go travel and try to walk around the city?
So learning words in the order of frequency is like a really like essential piece of trying to do this thing efficiently. You're like, you go to these language books that like they teach you all your fruits, and like you spend time learning words like apricot and fig that like you've never, like, I haven't said the word fig in like 5 years until today. Like, it's just not a word that I care about, and I really don't need to learn that in any other language. And so unless like a favorite fruit, which it's not. And so like you learning a word like mother, like that's a word you're going to use a lot, compared to like niece or like great granddaughter. So there's this a matter of like, well, how much payoff do you have for every word you're learning? And like, that's dramatic, which is to say, if you learn the top 1,000 words in a language, you will be able to recognize about like 80 to 90% of what's being spoken.
Like, I literally read my 1-year-old son a little book of Hungarian fruits around 3 hours ago. Citron, but that's pretty much all I know now.
I mean, there you go. It's just, yeah, it's problematic. And so that piece of like how much more valuable those first 1,000 words are compared to the next 1,000 words is like really intense. Like, we have so many words in languages, but we really don't use a lot of them. But those like first 100 words, which are like 50% of the whole language, like those are really abstract. Like, I think it was 5% of the entire English language is the word the. Like, you get one word and you just got 5% of the whole language. But like, what does the mean? Like, that's such a random concept. And what does the mean in some other language? Like, you're not going to get the same, like, that doesn't work. And so there's words that you can learn in the beginning that are just like mother, laptop, cell phone, where you're like, you're going to use those words all the time. And you can learn them with a picture and it's right. It's not like, like a translation is always slightly wrong, but a picture is always right, and you can just learn it that way. So why not spend your beginning time with that language learning that thing? Like, the very worst scenario is that you've now picked up almost everything you can see around you that you care about. Like, maybe you don't know the word for like laser pointer, but you do know the word for like laptop and phone and all the pieces that you actually care about. And so at that point, if that's the only thing you learn, which I think you should learn more, but if that's the only thing you know, then you're like able to say like hamburger, eat, and like you're able to do caveman language, which gets your point across, and you're able to do caveman language in like all the contexts you need them to be. And if you add in the extra pieces of like, I'm going to have the non-visual words and actually get some of the abstract content, then you can really talk about some stuff. I had this experience where I went back to Middlebury for Russian. That was my fourth time there. And I had learned all my stuff through frequency lists. I had learned the top like 1,200 words in Russian at that point through this method. And I didn't know anything else. And so everyone else had come through like normal Russian classes, and they like knew all of their fruits and all of like how to say the word fork and spoon and stuff. and like all the foods, and they gave us essays to write to like qualify for what class we're going into. And like the first essay is like, you know, you have a party, like say what you're going to, or what you're going to buy from the grocery store for your party. And I'm like, meat, bread, meat, vodka. Like it was just like, I had nothing. Like
throw in a potato and that's a Russian party. Yeah.
Right. Like, I was just like, I want some bread. And like, I tried to like riff on it. Cause I was like, I'm just about to lose all these points on this like entrance exam. Cause I'm just going to say the stupidest thing in the world. But I'm just like, I'm going to grab some meat. I sure do like meat. Meat, meat, meat. Here's some bread. I really want to get that. But like, I just couldn't talk about lists because I didn't know lists.
Yeah.
And then the second question was like, hey, what did you do for the last few days? And I was like, oh, I could talk about that. I was like, oh, well, I went on a plane and like I came over here and like I got to my college and I like got to my apartment and then I got my bed. Like I did all these things. And then the last one was like, what do you think about like the political stance about not paying teachers very well? Like, do you think teachers should be paid more or less? And like, what is our responsibility when we're trying to make policy in government? And I was like, oh, I know all of that vocabulary. And I wrote like a 3-page essay in the middle of this thing about like governmental policy regarding like teacher pay. And like, that's what it is to know a language from a frequency list, is that you could talk about the things that people actually care about. But like, yeah, if you need to go to the grocery store and like find figs, like you're kind of screwed. And for me, that's a nice trade-off. Like I would like to be able to have the real conversations, even if that means that when I need someone to like pass me a fork, I have to just kind of screw around and be like, hey, can you give me like the meat stab thing? Like that seems to be a good compromise for me.
It's kind of like, it always cracks me up where like beginning version one of like any language learning is like dog, cat, and colors. And like, it's like, I've never traveled and been like, hey, look at that dog. But I have been like, hey, can I have another one? Can I have a beer? How much to get here? I need to go left. I need to go right. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So let's, want to be cognizant of time. Like I want to get really tangible for people that are currently in self-isolation. So a lot of people, probably, I assume almost everyone in this group cares about learning a language. Is like most people, it's one of those things that, you know, you always want to learn, or you always want to learn that next one, but you just never have time to. Now people have found themselves with a little bit of extra free time.
Yep.
So if you were going to just very tangibly be like, okay, you want to be fluent in Spanish, do this. Like what would be the playbook that you would give them, like step by step?
Okay. I'll do the playbook on the zero budget version. No, screw it. Like we have free things out there. We can just do it. Okay.
Let's say keep in mind, you're locked in your house.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe we should also do this. Maybe this is more relevant to timing, but I would love to break it down with, if you have 1 hour a day to dedicate towards this, and then maybe how that would look if you had maybe 4 to 8 hours where you just want to really like really dive deep and take this seriously. But assume you have 1 hour a day, what would you do?
Okay. Step one, you spend the first week or two, if you have a whole hour, then it'll take you like just a week or two, a week, I would say, learning pronunciation. Screw vocab, screw grammar. Don't do any of that shit. Excuse my French. Just learn pronunciation.
Your German.
Right. And there's a right way to do that thing. You have to do it the right way, which is to say, you just listening to some YouTube videos is going to not quite be what you need. But like, we're giving free access to our app during COVID time. So like, just use that if our app supports it. And if our app doesn't support it, then like, go, like, there's pronunciation training resources on fluentforever.com that I've been assembling for just this purpose. Cause like, the resources out there are hard to find. And not really available. So easiest thing, just grab the app, use it. We have a free month access, actually free 45 days access. Just do that thing. Second layer is go grab like one of these pronunciation training things from my website, not from a sales standpoint. Like I don't really care about the extra, like the $10. Like I care about people not spending hours and hours looking on YouTube for a thing that doesn't really work. Third tier, if we don't have that language, like there's instructions on my website on how to build that thing yourself. But like you gotta learn pronunciation or you're screwed. That's your first week. Weeks two through whatever, start learning basic vocabulary. You either want to do this with Anki, which is a free app out there, and like there's a whole bunch of tutorials on my website on how to do this. Anki is a flashcard tool that allows you to just make flashcards of any type. And what you want are flashcards that have the word that you're learning and pictures. Like, that's what you want. You want no English involved. And you want to build some flashcards for these things. And I say flashcards not because, like, you know, flashcards are some sort of, like, because everyone needs to be super studious or something like that. But I say flashcards because that process of you saying, this is the word I want, and I just searched for that image and that word on Google Images, and I found, like, all these crazy images, and, like, that's kind of funny that Spanish, like, speakers use that meme for talking about dogs or talking about water or whatever. Like, haha, let's grab that one, like the weird meme one. That process is where you learn the word. That's not busy work. That's the learning that happens. And then if you get a flashcard out of that that you get to reuse because Anki's going to automatically quiz you at the right times, like, bonus. But the learning happens when you chose the picture. So spend some time learning some basic words. Get some basic vocab in there. Do it with Anki for free. Do it with our app for free for a little while. Like, do it with a tool that allows a computer to figure out when you're about to forget things so you can do that whole magical efficiency trick. And get your way through that frequency list. Get your way through those top 625 words. And then when you feel like you're starting to feel like, okay, I get this, I'm in a rhythm here, then screw up your rhythm and start learning some sentences. And so instead of learning, you know, I'm learning like English, let's say, and say the dog chases the cat. Instead of learning just dog and then picture of dog, learn like the blank chases the cat with a picture of a dog. And then go back in that sentence and learn words like chases and like the and all this abstract stuff. Because that's going to allow you to start actually forming thoughts in that language that aren't just caveman thoughts of like dog, eat, cat. And so that's sort of the sequence is sounds, words, sentences. And if you can get through those three pieces and just start imbibing like sentences and getting a bunch of content that way, that's going to really, really rapidly build fluency. That's not the whole thing, which is to say that you never, ever practicing with a native speaker is going to make for some somewhat stilted language, although still language. Like, you can actually have a conversation even if you've never talked with a native speaker this way. It won't feel good, but you'll be able to manage it. But it will get the data set that you need in your head in order to make that possible. Because if all the data is outside your head, like, you're screwed. Like, you can't, you need it right there in order to be able to speak it or understand it. So, like, that's how you get it in there.
Yeah, and so at what point and how do you recommend incorporating, assuming you're not traveling, like assuming you're still in self-isolation, how do you recommend incorporating speaking with people, and at what point in that process do you recommend it?
So I like to bring people in as early as I can. I think you spending a couple weeks on pronunciation or a week or two there, like 1 week there, like on your own, like I think that's fine. I maybe that's a little too early to bring someone in, but at the point where like the sounds are not terrifying to you of whatever new language you're learning, you bringing in a tutor is going to be pretty valuable. As long as you manage to have that tutoring time somehow reinforce the rest of your time.
So focusing it on the words that you're actually learning. Yeah,
exactly that. So you want it so that every time you, like if you're going to be doing these flashcard systems where they're going to be monitoring what's going on in your head, like, then what you want is the tutoring thing to reflect back onto those flashcard things. The magic of flashcards, I don't like it's a non-sexy name. No one likes flashcards. Like that's unfortunate. The thing that's actually valuable about flashcards is that let's say that, you know, we just had this big Finicape as we gave conversation and we just been talking about it for like 40 minutes. And then I make the flashcard and I say, okay, here's all the Hungarian cameras and oh my God, look at those brands and here's Finicape Bezuki. And I make that flashcard. And the next time I see that flashcard, I'm not going to think just about that picture. I'm going to think about this conversation that we just had. Right. And so if I manage to talk about this other word I'm learning with a tutor and then it shows up tomorrow in my flashcards, it's going to help me remember the conversation with the tutor. And like, that's the magic. Like that's when you get everything sort of cycling back in on itself and reinforcing itself.
Keep going.
No, I mean, just like that tutoring component is can be so valuable if you use it right and can be kind of not useless, but nearly useless if you don't. Like you just sort of talking about your day and like trying to practice some stuff and being like, hey, how do I say this about my dog? Like you're probably going to forget most of that. Yeah. But if you can like look at a list of the words that you are currently learning or the words that you're about to learn in a few days, and then you talk about that stuff with your tutor and then you do the work on your own, and then it reinforces itself, like that's super powerful.
And so I want to wrap this up soon because we have a ton of Q&A coming in. But I know this changes person to person, obviously depends on how focused you are and how like how concentrated you are in your studies. But given that you've seen so many people learn, if you had an hour a day, or if you had, you know, 4 hours a day, how long, and it's a language like an English speaker learning Spanish or French, how long do you think until someone can be fluent from the perspective, I don't know, fluent is kind of a loaded term, but like, can you, that you can actually watch, pull up a movie on Netflix and understand what's going on.
I love that layer, that level. That's the perfect level. That's it. That's like B2 in the European system. That's the point where language learning is stops being work and it's pure pleasure, where it's just like, I'm going to watch this thing and I'm going to understand most of it, and I can just watch more and learn on my own. So like you hit the fluency definition that I actually like. That should take you 6 months.
6 months doing 1 hour a day?
6 months and an hour a day.
And I imagine it's not completely linear, but like, so if you did 4 hours a day, how long do you think until?
I feel like for me, if I'm going to be really, really seriously learning a language, like I run out of capacity at like an hour and a half, maybe two. Like I just get tired. It's work. Like you're trying to jam stuff in your head, and you can make it fun. Like this idea of you going to like finding these crazy memes about like water in Spanish and stuff, like that's super, it can be super fun, but it's mental effort. And you trying to hammer it for like 8 hours or something is just going to make you sad. It would make me sad. Like maybe, I think there are people who are just monsters at this thing and are just like, I'm going to consume this language. And like, yeah, if you can actively be engaged and have attention, then, and for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 hours, then like you will learn this faster. And it is mostly linear. I found that when I was doing tests with Hungarian, where I would be like, how little can I learn this language? Like, what if I spent 15 minutes a day instead of an hour? And like, it scaled just like that. It was like, wow, I learn a quarter as much. Cool. And I think it should scale the other direction just about as well, as long as I can maintain attention. But if I'm just kind of zoning out and like staring at flashcards and like getting them wrong, like that doesn't count. Like you don't, go take a walk.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Cool. Well, Andy, looks like we have a lot of questions. Want to fire some off the grid?
I'm going to try to do a good job of combining some of these. So you just mentioned that level two of being able to, you know, watch a movie. The question about like how you go about learning intentionally from TV, movies, books. Do you think there's a place for that in the really early stages, or is that something that you really want to get through sort of like the frequency lists before you go into, you know, trying to go sit in front of a French language movie?
The issue is that there's three levels of French movie. I mean, there's levels of like difficulty in terms of like, I'm going to watch a kid's movie, a kid's TV show or whatever. But that aside, it's either you're watching a French movie with English subtitles, you're watching a French movie with French subtitles, or you're watching with no subtitles. You watching a French movie with English subtitles is you watching an English movie with French sounds. You will learn almost nothing from that. That from my standpoint is a waste of time from a language learning standpoint, maybe super interesting from a cultural standpoint. But beyond that, I think it's garbage. French movie, French subtitles. That's going to be really hard for someone who's starting out. You're going to understand very little if you only know like 100, 200 words. And I think that's going to be really frustrating, and frustrating experiences are not ones that you learn from. So I wouldn't do it there. I think that you need to kind of get about 80% of what you're seeing before it stops being frustrating and annoying. So I would start with the frequency stuff. And I would start, if I can, with French movies with French subtitles. And actually better than movies are TV. Long form stuff. Cause there's an experience I've had a few times where I've watched a movie in a new language and it's not a language I'm very good at. And so I understand, like I finally figure out who the main character is, like their name, like an hour and a half into the movie, and then the credits roll. And it's just upsetting. whereas with TV, I can do that. I can watch the first episode and be like, I don't know what the hell's going on. And then episode two comes on and I'm 30 minutes into that episode and I'm like, oh, that's the main character's name. Wow. And then by hour three, I'm like, wait, actually, I kind of get what's going on. And then there's 50 more hours because these TV series are infinitely long. So I like TV. I like TV with subtitles initially in the target language because it's basically, it's an audiobook with like visual cues. And then at the point where I'm like starting to really like get into that, that's when I'll wean myself off the subtitles and turn it into a listening exercise. The subtitle stuff, that's the, you're reading a book. You are improving your reading comprehension, not your listening comprehension. But at a certain point, you got to get good at the listening, and that's the point where you need to turn off the subtitles. But like that's, those are the three steps I would take.
Yeah. On the way to Japan, I watched all the movie Moneyball in English and then all of it again in Japanese, and it did not help.
Yeah,
I still don't understand the math behind Moneyball. Next question here goes back to a little bit more about pronunciation. This is from Abigail George, who's used your methods before, and the question was like going through understanding vocabulary, but still having a hard time getting through pronunciation. So, do you have any advice about kind of like building that sort of like muscle memory for like really getting the sounds down to a point that you can, you know, produce them yourselves?
Yeah. So the biggest component is going to be the ear training component. And that is why we built these pronunciation trainers and stuff. But it's not the whole thing. Like you can have times where you're like, I completely can hear the rolled Spanish R and it sucks in my mouth. I just cannot make them. It's like, rah, 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 rah. Like it's just not happening. And those are cases where you, like there's sort of two-ish ingredients. I don't know. Ingredient one is you got to hear it. If you can't hear it, there's no way you're going to be able to produce it well. So like that's the part that's usually missing. Part two is you have to kind of understand how to do it. Like you knowing that this consonant is made by moving your tongue to this spot on your mouth, like that actually becomes helpful at a point where you can hear it, but only if you can hear it. So like that's the second component. Third component is just practice, which sucks. Like sometimes it's like months of practice, which is upsetting. And then there's a fourth component, which is in terms of that practice, you sequencing these things together can sometimes be hard when it comes to like being able to say sounds. Like there's an example I often talked about, like in Russian, there's a word like to flinch, like vzdrognu, ya vzdrognu, I flinch. Ah. And like that has a lot of consonants all together in it. Like I can have a v and I know how to make a v sound, and I can make a z sound, and I can make a d sound, and I can make a r sound, but vzdr is like a really hard combination to put together. And so there are tricks for that, which are from opera, actually, where you just you chain them in backwards order. So if you have like vzdrognu and you're trying to say this and it's really hard, then you just say nu, which is easy. And you're like ognu, okay, that's easy. And you're like, okay, drognu, that's harder, drognu. And you're like, okay, let's get the z in there, zdrognu. And you're like, okay, let's get the whole sequence, vzdrognu. And so this is how you teach your tongue muscle memory, basically, is by you doing this back chaining concept of building from the end of the word to the front. Even that won't fix every problem. Like there's going to be some stuff that's hard. Like Arabic is brutal, for instance. And like some of those sounds are just like brutal. And so I would follow these pieces, but like also there is help out there. I would recommend interacting with native speakers and saying like, hey, this thing is hard for me. Can you help me get there by basically mimicking me? I'm going to say, you know, ru, and tell me what it's supposed to sound like. And they're like, ru. And I'm like, ru. And you're like, can you impersonate me? And they're like, okay, what I'm hearing is ru, and I want ru. And you're like, okay, let's try a little again. Du. And they're like, okay, better. I'm hearing du. I want ru. And like this back and forth with a native speaker tends to train your ear and also train your tongue at the same time. So that's the kind of thing that I would tend to go to. The other thing that I would just generally recommend is that if there's a guy running a website called Mimic Method, who is brilliant. And his pronunciation stuff, in terms of depth, if you're just like, I cannot quite get this thing, I need like hours and hours of pronunciation practice, Mimic Method is the way to go. That guy is awesome.
Awesome. Let's get one more question in. And actually, this one I just find to be quite interesting. But do you have any point of view on sign languages and like how things that are gestured might actually be very different or very similar to how you'd learn a spoken language?
Sign languages are our language. They function in exactly the same way. They go to the same spots in your brain. They have conjugations and nuance and like all the stuff that you would want from an actual language. Like I think sometimes people look at sign language and they're like, they try to translate it. And they're like, that's the word for that. And like, no, it's its own language. The challenge with sign language is when you're going to try and do this with like, when you're going to try and maximize efficiency by doing things like using these flashcard programs, what are you quizzing yourself on? How do you put the word there? Because there's, you know, are you going to use a spelling system for sign language? And from my standpoint, when I've been trying to like help people who are trying to learn sign language, I do move in that direction, which is to say that there are spelling systems for sign language. They're called glosses, and like you write out like words, and you have to sort of separately decide, okay, I'm going to learn that this word, this gloss, you know, it's considered a word. It looks like this in my hands, and so there's this extra step. But then you can just put these glosses on a flashcard, and on the other side, you do want to move to those images and say, this is that, and this is that. So there's like the pronunciation component in sign language is you connecting these glosses to what you're doing with your hands. And that has to be memorized word by word. And that's challenging, but is what you have to do.
So I'm gonna ask a final question. I think it kind of goes back to a little bit of what we're doing, which is also like really trying to build connection across the community. Do you have any practical tips for actually working in small groups to learn language? Do you find that to be useful? And I think the second piece of that is like creating a little bit of like a pressure and methodology to stay motivated. Like, do you see that having some accountability buddies to be useful in what's really a long haul? Like you described a 6-month commitment. I think most people are very bad at making 6-month commitments.
Yes.
How do you use other people to keep you focused?
So we're actually about to, like, once we release Japanese in the company, we have like 5 people who all want to learn Japanese together. and I've been like, yeah, let's get a group together. Like, let's help motivate each other. What you're looking for are creating personal connections to words. And you can do that in groups. So if I'm just learning the word dog in abstract and I see some sentence and I want to learn it, like, okay, cool. But if I can be in a group and we together can create a personal construct for dog, which is to say we can all hire a tutor and bring that tutor in and say, hey, teach the whole group. Like, let's talk about, you know, Frank's dog. Then, like, there's this phenomenon that occurs that, like, me learning the word dog from, like, the dog chases the cat, like, that's okay and pretty good if I chose the sentence. But, like, me learning the word dog from my dog's name is Norbert and he's insta-famous is, like, twice as good because it's personal, which is back to that levels of processing thing. But it doesn't have to be personal to you. It just has to be something you care about. So, like, Frank's dog works fine as long as I know Frank. And so we can have a group class where we've all shared the costs for this tutor, we've all shared the time, and we're also having additional personal interactions while we're talking about these words that help to create these personal connections where I'm like, oh, like, yeah, we're all learning dog together. Like, I care because Frank is also learning dog. Like, okay, cool. So that's either in terms of generating sentences to learn with a tutor all together in a group, or even just, hey, let's all learn the word dog today. And like, let's share what we chose. Like, oh my God, you chose that sentence? Like, that sounded like the most complicated sentence in the world. I can't believe you chose that thing. I chose the easy one. Like, you having that kind of interaction adds another layer of personal interaction on top of the word, will make each of those words more memorable, and also will serve to self-motivate because each person in the network, like, pushes the other person along. So that's how I would generally do it, is you learning together, you learning some of the same words together, and hopefully you building some personal connections together with each of those words.
Awesome. Gabe, before we give a proper thank you, I wanna seg that real quick into just sort of my plug for, you know, the people that are here right now and talking a little bit about this travel from home movement. So one thing I'm about to do is, if everybody can look in chat, I just dropped a survey to you. And this isn't an ordinary survey. We're going to ask you some basic questions here, but a lot of what we're trying to do with this travel from home movement is create intentional community. And the two pieces of that intentional community is, how do we entertain people? But then also, like, how do we actually build real meaningful connection? And the reason why we're focusing on these two things is, like, those are the embodiments of travel. Like, we travel because it's fun, but we could travel because we meet people, we have meaningful cultural experience, and we've realized, you know, you can do that from home. So one of the things that we're really trying to do is, you know, help people when we get to travel again to be able to speak the language, but also get to know some other people. So in this survey, what we're actually also asking of everybody is, like, what's your native and mother tongue? What do you want to learn? And are you interested in actually being connected with other native speakers or other people that want to learn with you? So part of our goal for this, like, starting tomorrow, is if you're serious about this, we're going to help build you some support and network, as well as all the other things that we have going on with travel from home. So if people wouldn't mind taking just a couple minutes to actually fill that out for us, that lets us set you up if you're interested. but also we can keep you in the loop with all the other things we're doing with travel from home. We have a bunch of events coming on next week, but really this is an early community and an early movement, and everybody that joined us here tonight is at the beginning of something that we find to be really important. So thanks everybody for taking time to do that. Gabe, thank
also, you. Also, before you start thanking Gabe, so I asked Gabe if he could hook up our community, and so I just tasted the promo code in the chat, but it's just TripScout, all one word. Gabe has offered to give everyone here 30 days for free. So I've used the app and I've loved it. So I wouldn't recommend something that I didn't actually really stand behind. And you know, I'm convinced as people start using it, they'll find a lot of value from it. So I just pasted it in there. So please, check it out and use it for free to start learning your language.
I also posted in chat the coupon codes are a little tricky to use. I pasted in chat a link to like how to do the coupon code, like where do you put it? So just so people have that.
Well, and we'll post that in the follow up as well. Gabe, how do you say travel from home in whatever your language?
I hate jumping into translations, and it's just the thing that immediately makes me absurdly nervous. So
it's like giving deadlines. I'd say via casa.
Reisen von zu Hause, von Hause.
Yeah. I could throw some fake Hungarian in there. Thank you. This was like fascinating and entertaining and such a great kickoff for us. Everybody join me in giving a, you know, travel from home round of applause for Gabe and whatever language you want that to be.
We'll give him some snaps.
Snaps. I appreciate the snaps.
So to everybody, thank you for doing that survey. Hope you join us again. This was recorded. So we'll send you the information with the recording. We'll send you the promo code. We'll send you the instructions. Hope to see you all again. Thanks for joining us. And again, stay at home.
Gabe, shukran, jankuya, merci, gracias, whatever.
This was great. This was great. Thank you for having me. This was super great.
Thanks, Gabe. Take care.
Hey. You too. Ciao.
Take care.
Bye-bye.